and welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Kay Murray, joined by Stevie Nicol in the studio, and we'll be starting by talking about first leg quarterfinals in the Europa League, beginning in Anfield between Liverpool and Atalanta, where Atalanta put three past Liverpool. The first of the goals coming from Scamacca. He'd get a goal in either half, and then to make it 3-0, we'd see Pasalic on the rebound, which was a big shock given the fact that Atalanta ended a 34 home game unbeaten run across all competitions for Liverpool. Gab Marcotti and Nadim Anua are joining us. We'll be hearing from the guys in just a moment. But let me start with you, Stevie, because it was hard for you to put your finger on it as to how you explain what happened to Liverpool tonight.
Well, there's a few elements to it. I think no question Liverpool weren't at it tonight. And there was a little passage in the first half in particular that stood out. Van Dijk was running back, and I think it was Scamacca that was behind him, and he was so casual. And it's kind of the way Liverpool went about this, I think. They were just too casual. There wasn't that little bit of desire and drive. Almost like they thought that they just had to turn up and they were going to win this game. And of course, you give a team like Atalanta some opportunities, and you saw they took them. So, from a defensive point of view, it's an absolute disaster. And it was interesting that after the game, Van Dijk was talking about how they gave the ball away to let Atalanta come at them. Well, guess what? As brilliant as Virgil's been all season, part of his job is to put fires out before they start. Part of your job as a defender is to be in a position where if you do lose the ball, then you do your job by defending. And the whole back line tonight were guilty of not doing that. And as I said, you saw the way that Scamacca took his goals, particularly the second one. I mean, 30% of the ball Atalanta had, and they had 11 shots, 7 of them on target. That has got poor defending written all over it. And at the end of the day, they deserved the 3-0 victory.
Do you think it might be hard for them to be as motivated as they may be if it were a Champions League game, given the fact it is a Europa League game? Do you think that plays a factor here?
I don't know whether it's the competition, but I certainly felt that motivation, I guess I would have to agree, was missing. Because you don't start a game as casually as they did if you're motivated in the right manner. And they didn't look as though they were motivated in the right manner, which is really not something we can talk about with a Jurgen Klopp side. And of course, an old coach of mine used to say it all the time, start well. Because if you start well and you start fast, you can always slow down. If you do it the other way around, sometimes you can't get going. And Liverpool never really got going. Even with all the possession they had, I didn't feel as though they were going to score. Goalkeeper had a couple of good saves, one from Salah after he came on. But really, he wasn't tested that much.
How did you see it, Gab?
I think Stevie photographed it pretty well. I mean, it's pretty obvious in the way they approached it. When you saw the lineup, when you saw, no Szoboszlai, no Diaz, no Mohamed Salah, and no Robertson. The intent was, all right, let me rotate guys a little bit. We're in a title race domestically. And whatever. But by the same token, I would have thought the people who did play, Curtis Jones, Elliott, Gakpo's a whole other kettle of fish. But all these guys would be like, hey, I'm here. I'm motivated. I want to give my all because, I want to give the manager something to think about in the league and whatnot. And that was entirely missing. The other thing I'd throw in, and I think this is on the defenders, sure, but it's also on Klopp. The way Atalanta play isn't a mystery, right? They intermittently go man for man and press you high all over the pitch. And where Liverpool had some limited success was simply hit the ball long. Hit the ball long too, because you have Darwin and Gakpo who are fast. And that back three with Hine and Jim City, whatever, is not particularly fast. And yet they had that 70% possession. That's all sterile possession. That's all them trying to pass it out of the back, not being particularly press resistant because Atalanta pressed really well and are really organized. And I thought that was just them just getting the game plan wrong, I think, and not really adjusting until it was too late.
Stevie, when it comes to that halftime, when he brought on, made a lot of changes, did Jurgen Klopp, and brought a lot of your usual starters on for Liverpool,
yep.
obviously you're looking at that to change the game, but they actually conceded more goals in the second half than the first half. What does that tell us?
Well, clearly Klopp wasn't happy and he made the changes. And then you're chasing the game. And regardless of who you are, when you chase the game, then you tend to leave more gaps defensively than you normally would do. But as I said previously, at the end of the day, your job as a defender is to defend first. And when you don't do it properly, then you give the opposition opportunities. And if you're lucky, they don't take them. Tonight, Scamacca in particular took every single thing pretty much that he was given. And then you pay the price. You know, personally, I would have preferred, you know, Gab's talking about not starting Salah and Szoboszlai. I always think, particularly, we're in the quarterfinals, regardless of what you think of Europa League, it's the quarterfinal. You want to win it, go and win it, and then take everybody off. You've got five subs. There's no excuse anymore. You can start your best players, and then once you win the game, then you take five of them off. I always think that's the best way to go. I understand why Klopp's rotating, and I understand why any club with in the position that Liverpool are in would rotate. But you can rotate after you've won the game as well. You don't have to take a chance and gamble and give the opposition something else to hold on to. Go win the game and then take them off. That's what I would have done.
Do you agree, Nadim?
No, I think that's fair. And I think listening to Stevie talk there, I think the point he made about starting fast and being able to slow down, I think is a key one. And that's something that we kind of expect from Liverpool. You know, especially being at home in a knockout competition in Europe, you'd think they're just going to run teams over, especially an Atalanta side, who are a good side. But it's not as if, you know, they're challenging for the Scudetto this year or anything like that. So I think this result in itself is a huge shock for everyone. But I think, I agree with Stevie. Some of the defending at times was so disappointing. And I think from my standpoint, when I look at Liverpool defend on occasion, I think it's almost like they're trying to show that they've got everything under control. They don't want to be seen to be rushed. They don't want to be seen to be panicking. But playing against really good sides, what you're doing is allowing that person to be able to pick the right pass, to be able to make the right run, to be able to have the right moment. I think there has to be a level of intensity that's there. And as Stevie said, from the start of the game, it wasn't there. And as a consequence, they struggled throughout the game and gave Atalanta a big boost in believing that they can go and get a result there.
I wonder how Stevie has rated the defenders for Liverpool tonight, because we did ask him to give us his player ratings and he did so. So let's take a look at what we've got, Stevie. OK, 3 for Tsimikas, Van Dijk, Konate and Gomez, all 4s.
Well, listen, 5. To me, 5 is bang average. And all of them, Gomez, Konate and Van Dijk, were below bang average tonight. Kelleher, listen, I guess it's tough to really slaughter Kelleher, because the first goal is horrendous. I think he should have done better with the third one. But the truth is, he's a young kid learning his trade. He's come in, he's done really well. And tonight was just one of those nights for him. Tsimikas, well, half-time couldn't have come quick enough to get him off, to be honest. And the front three, actually, you know, Nunes had a chance in the first half. And I was annoyed at the way he went about it. He was trying to just dink it over the goalkeeper, but it looked so nonchalant and careless and sloppy. You know, that really annoyed me, the way he tried to do it. Elliot was unfortunate with his strike, but other than that, not an awful lot. And Gakpo, a lot of energy, probably as much energy as anybody else, but nothing on the end of it.
Joe Gomez, you seem to be frustrated quite often with this player.
Listen, Joe, there's a reason Joe's never scored a goal for Liverpool, right? And so, when you're in it, when you know that, and you know that it's not your forte, then get the ball and give it to somebody whose forte it is to either create or have a strike at goal. That was what frustrated me. And we saw during the game that it frustrated Jurgen Klopp as well. Ball coming out from a corner. Is the strike on? Yes, the strike is on. But you know what? When you're 0 for 1,000, you're probably better giving it to somebody else.
Were Stevie's ratings generous, Gab?
You know, when you think back and you just... I mean, we saw the highlights, but Atalanta could have easily scored 3 other goals. You had the 2 Koopmeiners chances. You had the other chance where Di Ketelaere, for reasons only he will ever understand, decides to backheel it rather than just shoot the ball straight into the net, and then they screw up the shot, and then you had the Scamacca header late on, which went, you know, over the bar, and he should have scored. I don't understand how you fail to see the tall man with the large neck tattoos in the middle of your area, and that's what it. That's really what it felt like. And, you know, this is a real defensive collapse. And guess what? It's a defensive collapse where people can't just go and blame Trent Alexander-Arnold, because guess what? He wasn't playing. The dude was on the bench. No, you got to go and blame the other guys for this one.
How will it be received in Italy? How is this news going to go down? What Atalanta have done here, Gab?
Oh, I think this is historical. Now, is it Atalanta's greatest ever European night? No, of course not. I mean, they reached the Champions League semifinals a few years ago, but that was in COVID, and that was a different context. I mean, Scamacca, I think, is the first Italian player to score two goals at Anfield, so big note of that. There's also a little bit of pride, and this is something I kind of dug out myself, but in the last 3 years, only four managers have actually won at Anfield. Three of them are Italian, obviously Gasperini tonight, Simone Inzaghi, and Carlo Ancelotti with Real Madrid in that 5-2, which is also the last time that Liverpool lost at Anfield. The fourth, even though he's kind of yucky because he went to Princeton, is kind of Italian adjacent because he lives in Italy, and that's Jesse Marsh with Leeds United. So, you know, we'll take some pride in that. You know, we don't have that much else to celebrate right
that's
now.
That's a stretch, isn't
it? So, yeah, I think it's a big deal.
Let them have it, all right?
Well, you know, it's a bit of a stretch.
Let them have it tonight, but let's talk about the second leg and the tie overall. Nadim, percentage chance Liverpool can go through?
Wow. I'm going to say 40%. Does that seem fair? 40%?
Ooh, that's high.
High?
That's high.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think that's high, Nadim. 40%. Mm.
Well,
3-0.
It does feel high. It does feel high, but I think Liverpool can win a game by three to take it to extra time or what have you. But still, Atalanta are our favourites, which is why I've given them more than 50%. You see my thinking? That's where I'm coming from.
What do you say, Stevie?
It's less than 40. I mean, to beat anybody 3-0 away from home in Europe isn't easy. Not only you've got the team, you've got the crowd against you, and to have to score at least three goals, you're going to have to chase the game. And we saw what happened tonight when Liverpool chased the game at home and left all kinds of holes. And as Gab said, it could have been five.
20%.
It's got to be. You're going to leave holes. Liverpool are going to have to go that way. That means they're going to be leaving holes.
Is 20 still high, Gab, for you?
It's got to be 20, Gab, isn't it?
I'm much closer to Stevie than I am to Nadim here. Look, I mean, Liverpool have had games where they've won by three goals or more. And by the way, if they win by three goals, it goes to penalties. It's not like they've won. But, you know, I think they beat Bournemouth this season. They beat Sparta Prague 5-1. But, you know, with all due respect to Sparta Prague, Atalanta aren't Sparta Prague. So it's a big ask. And, yeah, I'd say 20%, maybe even a little bit less is about right. I think it's also going to depend whether, you know, what happens in the league this weekend. What happens against Palace? Is there some negative carryover? Does that change the way that they approach this next game? So, yeah, no, I think, sure, they're not out of it, but, yeah, it's a heavy, heavy lift to turn this around.
Well, let's talk about what does happen in the league this weekend and the fact that that could play as well and where there could be some slip-ups in the title race. We're just taking a look at the top three's upcoming schedule, but it is this weekend we'd like to focus on. Arsenal have Aston Villa, Liverpool have Crystal Palace, Manchester City have Luton Town. Stevie, if any, where do you see the slip-ups this weekend?
Well, can I just say that absolutely there will be no slip-up at Anfield against Crystal Palace. After tonight, Jurgen Klopp is going to be giving each player a rocket before the kick-off on Saturday. So I do not foresee a problem with Palace. I can't see a problem with City and Luton either. So the only game I think where it's possible is Aston Villa. We know Villa are capable. It depends on the Villa that turns up. Recently they've been a little up and down. So yeah, if there's going to be any sort of slip-ups, I see it being Aston Villa. I don't see it at Anfield. And I certainly don't see City slipping against Luton.
Do you see any slip-ups tonight, Em?
I personally don't. I think the fact that City played on the Tuesday and they're obviously playing against Luton, I think they'll win that one. I think Liverpool, as Stevie said, are going to be trying to have a big reaction based on what happened tonight. And then for that game, the Arsenal, Villa one, you're thinking, well, that is a big game. Villa pushing for fourth. And one of my friends was trying to tell me, you know, I could see Arsenal dropping points there, especially because Arsenal were playing in Europe. I said, well, Villa are playing in Europe as well. Villa are playing Thursday night. So maybe the fact that, you know, that is the thing negates their possibility this weekend, playing against an Arsenal side who, for me, currently are the best team in the league as such. So I can't see any points being dropped at all from that top three.
Gab?
I agree. It's unlikely they'll drop points. What I would point out about Villa is also they've had a ton of injuries as well. There's also 48 hours less rest. If there is one where I think things could get a little bit hairy, and this seems entirely counterintuitive, it's Luton Town against City. Simple reason, Luton are absolutely desperate. We've seen how they can be, with all their foibles and whatever else, they can be a really, really awkward team to play against. Is there a risk that City will look past them and then start worrying about Real Madrid on Wednesday? Probably not, because they've been there, done that, and Pep knows what he's doing. But, you know, they still have a couple players out in Ake and Walker. And like I said, Luton can be physical, they can be direct, and they have made life very uncomfortable for a lot of big teams. So maybe that's the closest, but no, I expect three wins.
Okay, well, make sure to join us tomorrow as we look ahead to a big weekend of action across the board in football. Join us on ESPN FC every single day.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
How can you whistle, you let loose the ball, and then you take it up in the hand, and then you find some rule afterwards saying that there was not a penalty?
Gabriel was under no pressure. It's not like he panicked and put his hand on the ball because he saw pressure coming in. He thought he was resetting it. There was the controversy if he'd have given this. The only person I've met on the planet is Jan that thinks it should have been a penalty.
And Thomas Tuchel.
Which people do you meet in your daily life? The explanation you had there is just ludicrous. What do you say there? Because he wasn't pressure, that is not a free kick. So this is your new rule then.
There was no pressure on Gabriel, so why would he do that if he didn't think he was just resetting the play?
Yeah, but it was a whistle. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what Gabriel thinks or thought. This has nothing to do with the case. So that you
I
have
think
to
you're get, desperate get some to get proof. German teams into the next round because they've had such a a bad season.
And you
Bayern
are
Munich.
Desperate to going after Thomas Tuchel. If that's the best proof you're having, you better have a good lawyer.
No, why would he do it if he wasn't resetting the play?
Yeah, so that is a new rule now in the rule book that every player can think, I thought I heard a whistle before. No, Craig, terrible.
You've definitely applied for a German passport.
So, as you may have seen, the guys definitely got into that last night. Now, Craig's met all of you on this panel, so we're going to get your take on what happened in that controversial moment where Gabriel picked up the ball that was played to him by David Raya and no penalty was given. OK. Where to start on this one? Gab.
I am 1,000,000% with Craig, with Glenn Nyberg. I think it's kind of sad and pathetic that Thomas Tuchel made such a big deal of this out of the game. He strikes me as the kind of person who would have somebody arrested and thrown in prison for jaywalking at 5 a.m. on Christmas morning because, oh, look, you're not on the stripes. Listen, we have laws of the game essentially for two reasons. To protect the safety of the players and to make sure nobody gets an unfair advantage. This is not an issue of safety. This was not an issue of anybody getting an unfair advantage. We also have a basic concept called proportionality. If he whistles for that, all he can do is give a penalty. He can't book Gabriel. He can't give them one of those silly indirect free kicks inside the box from which nobody ever scores. He has to go and give a penalty. And as Nyberg said, correctly, he said it would be absolutely ridiculous to go and decide a Champions League quarterfinal based on something this persnickety. He didn't use the word persnickety. I will. And he's absolutely right. And why Tuchel went ballistic over this, and, you know, I frankly don't get it. You know, let's go talk about Harry Kane's elbow. Why don't we? Maybe that's what he's doing. I don't know. I just find this completely silly. And I'm all for the letter of the law, but I also want referees who can manage games, use common sense, and understand the spirit of the laws of the game.
So the ref was right.
Is this schoolboy football we're playing where everybody gets a medal and all that? So because Gabriel isn't concentrating and doesn't realise that his goalkeeper's taken it and he picks it up, then you get to go again. You can come out with all this in the spirit of the game and all the rest of it. It's called professional football. You have to be professional. What would you do? What would you do if somebody took a free kick and the goalkeeper went, hold on a minute, I wasn't ready? Well, in the spirit of the game, we'll need to retake the free kick. No, Gabriel has to understand what's going on.
You don't get an advantage. If you take a free kick, you get an advantage. There's no advantage here.
I don't care about all this grey area advantage. Nobody gets an advantage or nobody's hurt. Listen, when the ball's rolling, the ball's in play and you pick it up, it's handball. And you can't turn around and say, well, I didn't realise it was in play. And then because there's nobody around, then we get to get a do-over. It's a penalty kick. It's called professional football. Professional. When you're playing the game, you have to be alive, you have to be switched on. And if the goalkeeper takes the goal kick and rolls it to me, it's my responsibility to know that he's actually put the ball in play. I can't just pick the ball up and go, oh, sorry, I didn't realise, and let's go and do a do-over. I mean, that's just not, right. Not right at all.
I don't want a Champions League draw decided by the letter of the law. Just like I didn't want the 2006 World Cup.
But it's a player's mistake,
Gab. But it's not a significant mistake. It's not.
Of course it is.
It's not anything relevant.
I'll tell you how significant it is.
It's not relevant to the game.
It would have been a penalty kick and probably a goal.
Yeah.
So it is a significant mistake. It's a significant mistake for a professional in the middle of a game not to be tuned into what's going on. That's what it is.
The handball law wasn't designed to punish things like that. And I think we can all recognize that. Now we can all, you know, act like Tuchel if we like. Sure. But it's also like, do you even want to win? Do you want to advance based on this? Like, would you as a coach
say,
I'm really
think
proud
I could kill it?
To go through? Oh, look, ha-ha.
I couldn't care less.
Oh, boy, I'm really good because Gabriel picked up the ball.
I couldn't care less. If I'm Thomas Tuchel and I'm sat on the bench, I want a penalty kick. I want a penalty kick.
Yeah, of course you do.
Nadim, where do you stand on it?
So I stand with Jan, I stand with Stevie, and I think it's one of the most ridiculous bits of play I've seen. And I think maybe what we're sort of disregarding is like the initial mistake, in my opinion, is from Raya, because we've seen goalkeepers have this setup before for a goal kick, and they usually roll the ball to a player or throw it to them so that the player can then initiate the goal kick by putting the ball down and then playing it to the goalie. So I think Raya's made that initial mistake, and Gabriel's obviously sleeping because he thinks Ryan must have rolled it to him, which is why he's gone with his hand himself. And I don't think the fact that, you know, it goes against the spirit of the game and so on should really matter, in my opinion, to this instance, because it's a mistake that those guys have made. People might make a mistake that leads to somebody going through that doesn't necessarily award a penalty, but can still lead to a goal anyway. So I think Gabriel is, if we probably look back at footage, I'm sure he's received the ball from Raya with his hands in the air. But if this penalty was given, what would Arsenal's players' argument have been about the referee giving them a penalty against them? Because they can't say the referee didn't blow his whistle, because he did. This is a mistake that those guys have made. And yes, it might seem like a really weird way to score a goal, but it's a really weird way because we're watching some of the highest standard of football in Europe and around the world. Like, Raya and Gabriel should be doing better in that situation. If they make a mistake like that, I think they're incredibly lucky to get away with it. And again, like I say, sometimes you can have a penalty given against you and you can try and plead your case. What case would they have been pleading to the referee if you gave a penalty in that moment? For me, I can't think of one.
Two against one there, Gab.
Yeah, I mean, look, I take on board what Nadim has, what Nadim said. They wouldn't have had a legal case if you go by the letter of the law. But I do wonder, we hear so often when we go and we watch games, we talk about, oh, why can't referees use more common sense? Why can't they use more discretion? Why can't we have common sense refereeing? Let's put X players in VAR and all this nonsense. Here, to me, is a very, very obvious case. And I don't think it's a question of it being professionals or anything. It's a question, if you want to talk about professionals, if you want to talk about business, if you want to talk about sports entertainment, do you want a game decided by something like this, by some sort of maniacal adherence to the laws? I think Nyberg showed a lot of courage on the opposite of what Thomas Tuchel said, where, you know, he basically called him a wuss and said he wasn't courageous enough. He showed a lot of courage in doing this because he will get criticism from people who believe that you should apply the letter of the law in all instances and whatever else. And he made that, and I have absolutely no issue. I want to see games won on the pitch by teams competing, not through nonsense like this.
Do you see Gab's point, Nadim?
I see it more so from a very, 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 very just like calm way, which unfortunately isn't the way that I played football or lots of other people. And I think I'd be quite furious if that was something that I was playing against and I watched it happen. Because you will feel outraged. The referee might make decisions which you completely disagree with around the field, which you know, like he's doing because of the letter of law or whatever. And in this instance, as I say, they've made a mistake. In fact, you could argue they've made two, and they're not being punished for it because the referee says, well, that's not the right way to decide this game. Well, a lot of games are decided by mistakes, especially later in the game anyway. If they're going to be switching off for that time, like, trust me, I guarantee that they will not do that mistake again because they know how big that moment was and how they got away with it. And I think that says a lot about the nature of the decision the referee made, because I still believe it to be an incorrect one.
Just one point on Gab's common sense thing. Yes, we do say things like that. But when we're talking about that, we're talking about a situation where Van Persie gets sent off in the Champions League for kicking the ball away, right? That would have been a common sense thing not to send them off. This has got nothing to do with common sense. This is a player making a mistake. It's a mental error. The same as playing people onside. The same as bringing somebody... It's mental error. It's a complete and utter mental error. And that's why it should have been dealt with.
With a penalty kick.
How is Van Persie
kicking the ball away not a mental error?
Because there was a grey area whether... he could have not heard the whistle. And there was a sufficient time span between it where the referee could have went, you know what, I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. You can't give somebody just picking the ball up, Gab, the benefit of the doubt. That's just a complete and total, utter mental error that has to be punished.
So Van Persie could have not heard the whistle, but Gabriel must have heard it. All right, I don't follow this.
We've got to move on.
We're talking about common sense here.
And
you're not using common sense with the argument.
We've got more refereeing points to deal with because the Premier League is set to introduce semi-automated offside technology in the hope of speeding up VAR calls. A league statement has said that the technology will provide quicker and consistent placement of the virtual offside line based on optical player tracking, blah-de-blah-de-blah. Anyway, we're going to look back at some of the moments that would have changed if this technology had been in use. Last season, you'll remember Estupiñán against Crystal Palace, where his first half goal was ruled out. The lines were drawn in the VAR room to determine if he was in an offside position, but they were drawn incorrectly. VAR put lines on the wrong defender, so this goal would have stood. But in contrast, there are some goals that have stood that wouldn't have under this new technology. Jack Grealish's goal against Palace in December would have been disallowed. Obviously, that took a long time to draw the lines in that instance. It would have been disallowed because the margin of error would be zero. And then there are some more examples as well. But we're just showing you two sides of the table when we do this. So, Gab, why are they doing this?
I think they're doing it because the Premier League's a funny animal, right? This is expensive relatively expensive to bring in. And they felt that, we're not quite sure. We don't need it. We're the best league in the world. And then they saw that it's been introduced in other countries. They saw it was introduced, obviously, at the World Cup and in UEFA competitions, although there's different types of technology. And they said, all right, we want this too. And I think it definitely takes some pressure off of VAR. And even though they didn't say this in public, one of the issues with VAR is that video assistant referees are referees, and you can be a phenomenal referee on the pitch, but not necessarily be a great VAR. And you and your assistant might not be great at drawing lines on a screen. It's a different skill set. And I think this takes some of the pressure off that. And so the VARs can, focus on other decisions that require more of a refereeing mind than a drawing lines on a screen mind.
Fantastic.
You like it?
Yeah. Get rid of the human element. And we get it done quicker. I mean, I don't really. Is there any argument for not bringing this in? Fantastic. The two main reasons why all the problems are caused: human element taking too long. Get rid of one, and you get it quicker. Fantastic.
Nadim.
No, I agree. And interesting, one of my friends is an assistant referee in the Premier League, and I've not spoken to him about this, but when he talks about having to work in VAR and stuff on the sidelines, like anything that will make their job sort of more comfortable and easier for them, I think the better they can be in terms of making sure that the decisions that need to be correct are correct. And I think for the past few years now, as soon as there's a replay and you see people start drawing the lines, so many people point at the TV, that's in the wrong place, this is in the wrong place, that's the wrong angle, that's this, that's that. But I think something more uniform along the way will sort of maybe limit some of the arguments, but then I end up at a position whereby we say, well, this is the way it is, this is the way it goes, and we can move forward with this.
Now, Gab is remaining with us throughout the show, but you can hear a lot more from him on the latest Gab and Jules podcast. It drops twice a week, and you'll be able to get it wherever you do get your podcast. The latest one is out now.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Bayer Leverkusen's incredible season rolls on. 2-0 they beat West Ham, and they did so late on with goals from Jonas Hofmann and Victor Boniface's first goal since his return from injury. It means their incredible unbeaten run this season now stands at 42 games, not a single loss in every single competition. Nadim, you were watching this one. What did you make of it all?
Yeah, well, I think there was a chance for Kudus in the first half on a break when Mikel Antonio burst on the left-hand side, really jet past Tarn. I thought, you know, maybe this could be a tough game for Leverkusen because they were going up against a very solid West Ham side defensively, kind of parking the bus, but they had a few extra gears to go and try and hit them on the break as well. But as the game progressed, I think they just got deeper and deeper. Some of those out balls, they stopped being there. And I think as well, looking into the second leg, Paquetá getting a yellow card, me suspended for that second leg is huge. And they were doing so well, but, well, I say so well, for a neutral, you wouldn't have enjoyed watching how they played. You got a chance to see how Leverkusen attack. And I think for West Ham, they were committing the bodies back. They were making challenges. You know, they were hoping that somebody could carry the ball up the field. And it was just one of those days where they were holding on. I thought maybe then going into the second leg in London, they could have a chance. But then goals in the first goal. And then the killer second goal. I think that's the one that's going to be just a bridge too far. Because for the style of play that they have, with the players they have in transition, they have a chance. But I think Leverkusen, for the way they dominate the ball, you know, if they can create 33 shots today, there's nothing saying that they can't do similar next week. So unfortunately, I think this percentage is going to be far lower than one I gave for Liverpool.
How impressed were you with Leverkusen, Nadim?
Yeah, do you know what? I was impressed. I'll be honest, I've not watched tons of them this season. And I think I like the way that the wing-backs were playing. I like Verts as well. I think seeing Schick come off and seeing Boniface, his fellow Nigerian, come on there and score his first goal back, that was good. You could see that they were confident, they were moving the ball well. But West Ham, they did cause them one or two problems in terms of how they were defending because they were very, very narrow. So some of the freedom that maybe some of those players needed, it wasn't there. And they're very good at committing bodies to try and block those shots. But you can see they're a side that are just supremely confident. They sort of carry themselves in a way where you can tell that have not lost in a long time. And yes, they had one or two scares as such, but you know they're one of the class sides in Europe this season. So you could definitely see it. And yeah, I think 2-0 was the very least that they'll probably feel they deserve from this game.
And of course, this weekend, they can wrap up the Bundesliga title. It has been an incredible run, Gab, for Xabi Alonso. This season in particular, with those 42 games unbeaten in every single competition, how insane is this?
So just for some historical context, if they avoid defeat this weekend, they will reach 43, obviously, which would match the record among in a big five European league. This is post-war, so after European football, because I think back in the 1910s, I think at one point Celtic went like 150 games or 112 games unbeaten, something crazy like that. But basically, since European competition, the record is currently, I believe, 48 games. And that was set by Benfica in the early 60s. So, I mean, they could break that record this season. It's not entirely unreasonable. If they get past, you know, they win this weekend, get past West Ham, they'll have the German Cup final, of course, against Kaiserslautern, I believe. And then a couple more games, semifinals, that's where it could happen.
Yeah, been a brilliant season. It could be about to get even better this weekend for Leverkusen, who, as mentioned, can wrap that title up. You can catch all of our Bundesliga action this weekend on Saturday. They could already seal it if Bayern Munich lose their game to Köln and if Stuttgart lose their game to Eintracht Frankfurt. But on Sunday, all they have got to do is win. They just need 2 points from the remaining six games or just match what's happened with the other two teams behind them. It is a big weekend in the Bundesliga, a historic one too. Gianluca Mancini's goal was the difference between Milan and Roma at the San Siro in the first leg Europa League quarter-final. Between the two sides, It means Daniele De Rossi's Roma now take that 1-0 lead to the Stadio Olimpico next week. Gab, tell us more about what we witnessed tonight.
Well, I think they're remarkable. Obviously, you talked about De Rossi and the turnaround. They were ninth when he took over. They're now fifth in Serie A, closing in on fourth. And Jose Mourinho did a phenomenal job, obviously, in getting them to the two European finals. But guess what? They're on their way to a European final again this year with De Rossi. Now he's got his injured players coming back. Tonight, I don't think... I think one of Milan's issues were... they were really let down by their big attacking guns. Pulisic had a difficult game. And I thought Rafael Leao especially had a rough night. I think Milan remain a better team. But on the night, the way Roma approached this game, the way they got their goal, Mancini, of course, also their match winner in the derby against Lazio this past weekend, they wrote it out. And that's the thing about De Rossi. He can go and he can blind you with attacking football, but he also knows how to hang in there, get gritty and defend.
How do you think it's going to turn out then, Gab?
I think it's all to play for. I mean, there's no, you know, again, no away rule, no away goals. This really makes a difference. And I think this is still wide open for the return leg, but certainly for Roma, it's much, much more of a confidence booster going forward. For them also, they still have to battle more, arguably, in Serie A than Milan, who I think at this stage probably feel like they have second place locked up, so that could work to Milan's advantage. But yeah, for me, it's still a toss-up. There's no reason Milan can't go to the Stadio Olimpico and win, but I mean, this is undoubtedly a huge result for Roma.
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Felt cartridge.
What were you thinking that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much unknown.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia. Wednesday night at 10, 9 central on ABC.
Got some brilliant celebrations in Bilbao for Athletic celebrating the Copa del Rey. 23-24 champions. Absolutely brilliant city, brilliant achievement, and great to see celebrations like this one for Ernesto Valverde and his men. That win over Mallorca coming at the weekend. Upcoming La Liga schedule looks like this, and you can see Athletic Club with some wraparound coverage against Villarreal on Sunday. There's a lot of games to look forward to on Saturday as well. Wraparound coverage of those. Atleti taking on Girona, Mallorca taking on Real Madrid, and Cadiz against Barcelona. Be sure to be with us for all of these games in English and in Spanish. And registration is open for El Clasico's watch party at Splitsville in Anaheim, California. Scan the QR code and then follow the instructions to register for this event, which will take place on Sunday, April 21st, beginning at 10 a.m. Pacific time. If Splitsville reaches full capacity, feel free to join us at Downtown Disney's viewing event, where no registration will be needed. And that's all we've got time for on the latest edition of ESPN FC. Thank you so much for being with us. Stick around, though. Nadim and Gab are going to be back. Stevie's sticking around. They're going to answer your questions for extra time. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. We have Stevie Nicol here in the studio, Gab Marcotti and Nadim Anua here to answer your questions today. The first question is for you, Stevie.
All right.
Stevie, what would you have said to the dressing room after a game like today, considering their form since the United FA Cup game?
Ooh, I think this is a tough one, because the easiest and the obvious thing to do after a display like this is to get into people. But I think the way it turned out, I think if you're Klopp, you have to look at how you prepared your team. Because it didn't seem like they stepped on the field and had that energy and desire and just the bit between the teeth. It looked a little lackadaisical. And so I think if I'm Klopp, I'm thinking, is that my fault? Is that down to me? I didn't put them on the field in the right frame of mind. So I think that's probably how I would go about this one.
Stevie, should Klopp play the second team in the second leg and just focus on the Premier League? What would you do in his position?
I think at this stage of the season, you've got to go and win football matches. It's about winning. At the end of the day, it's Klopp's last hurrah for Liverpool. I'm sure all the players want to play, not just in this game, but play for him and try and undo what they've done in this first leg. You go for it. I think between now and the end of the season, you put your best team on the field and you go and win. And then maybe you can rest players or rotate, as I said in the show. Go and win the game and then start taking players off once you've won the game. So, yeah, right now, you've got to go on the field and win.
Speaking about resting players, Nadim, are you worried that Rodri said he needed a rest? And how does Pep set up differently without him?
Not worried as such, because yes, he has played a lot of games, but interestingly, not the most games for City this year. That would be one Phil Foden. But I think the fact that he says he is tired, maybe he is carrying something. I think he was rested maybe a couple of games ago. But I just appreciate the fact he's being honest. And I think Rodri himself, at times, like, he can say he's tired, but then he also wants to play in all these big games. And he knows coming this last stage of the season, every game is enormous. So yes, he is tired, but I think as you look around the league, most players probably are as well. So I think Guardiola will find a way to do things slightly differently, especially potentially against Luton, who aren't necessarily the best side. But yeah, it's not a great thing to hear, especially with the Euros coming in the summer as well for him.
Who did he tell he was tired?
I don't know.
I mean, why would you do that?
Kev, what did you want to say?
Well, so it's funny because, I think Rodri is arguably City's most important player, but he's not just Foden. Foden's played about 100-odd minutes, more than he has this season. But in terms of minutes for club and country this season, Rodri's actually 10th in Europe. Number one, by a huge margin, weirdly, is Bruno Fernandes. The issue is Rodri's also played a ton of minutes last season, too. And I think at this stage, if the player feels that he has to come out and say this in public, the one thing that would be my concern is this has to go back to City's medical staff. It goes back to their physical people, because this should not be happening. You should know when you have a player in a red zone, it should never get to the point where the player has to come out in public and say it. And I would imagine Pep Guardiola would be really, really unhappy with what's happened there, where there was some breakdown, that you couldn't have kind of managed his minutes in such a way that he doesn't have to come out and actually say this. Because you know what? Even if he plays, if he has another bad game like he had at the weekend, people are going to say, oh, look, he's tired. It's going to affect him. It's going to get into his head. It's going to get in the way he's perceived if he does play. So I think there's definitely been a breakdown there.
Yeah, it was in an interview that he said it.
Why? That's madness. If I'm the manager, I'm going, why are you telling every other person you're tired? You come and tell me, or you tell the staff that Gab's talking about.
But if you get asked that question, what are you going to
do? Don't answer it. Well, how much have you got in your bank balance?
Stevie, he did tell. Stevie, he probably did tell the staff. I'm assuming he's a very good professional. I think he did tell the staff. Maybe it might even be so much that the staff said, look, he needs to sit out. You know, let's see some Mateus Nunez action in there. And then maybe Pep decided, no, I have to play him anyway because it's a big game, because we've slipped a third or whatever. There's a lot of stuff here we don't know. But for somebody like Rodri, who rarely speaks out of turn to say this, I suspect there's something behind it.
And at the end of the day, if Pep decides to play him, then that's his prerogative. But there isn't a situation that makes it right that a player comes out publicly and says he's tired. There's just not a right time. When the season's finished and you can turn around and say, oh, I don't know how I managed the last 10 games, I was really tired, because it doesn't matter, then it's gone. But you don't come out and say to anybody in the press, that you're tired.
Stevie, how does it feel that Liverpool were in a quadruple quest until the FA Cup game against United, and now chances are Klopp's farewell is going to end with just one Carabao Cup?
That's a very negative way of looking at things. I never thought they were going to get the quadruple anyway. So is it a very negative way of looking at things?
Of course it is. So what's a more realistic way of looking at things?
Well, they've got a chance of winning the Premier League. And they could be back in pole position by the weekend. Arsenal have got a harder run in my opinion. And so that means that Liverpool absolutely are right on the tails of them. So that's how I'm looking at it. I mean, listen, you don't think about how many and if and that and ands, no. Right now is about winning the next game and being positive.
Nadim, who are your favourites to win the Premier League right now?
I would lean towards Arsenal. I think given how sort of well they've been attacking and defending since, you know, they went on that infamous trip to Dubai, I've got to lean towards them. Their goal difference is huge and defensively they're good. And as I say, they seem to be scoring a ton of goals as well. So I think I'm leaning towards them.
Geb, do you think Roma can win the Europa League and De Rossi is going to be a top manager like Carlo?
I think what De Rossi's brought this year and the way he's spoken has been absolutely tremendous. It's funny because Roma's style has undeniably changed since he took over. The underlying metrics aren't entirely dissimilar to what they were under Mourinho in terms of expected goals conceded and expected goals on the attacking side. But I think he's such a tremendous communicator. And he's taken over a tough situation. I think from that sense, he certainly has all his ducks in a row. He tries to play attacking football, even though, you know, obviously all players he inherited. So he's well positioned. But I mean, before we mentioned him and Carletto Ancelotti in the same breath as managers, you know, maybe he can go win a couple Champions League titles first.
Yeah, just a few. All right, Nadim, do you ever feel like you might have retired a bit too early?
No, I can't say I ever think that now. Usually, if someone offers that sort of suggestion, I tend to see people running around doing pre-season training. And I'm like, no. And then when winter comes, they're out there playing in the rain, the dark and all that stuff. I'm like, no. So I'll be honest, I think I retired at the right time for me and I'm very much enjoying retirement now in my 30s.
I don't know. I think I would swap with Adrian at Liverpool.
Oh, you were saying this today.
Andrew, he's on 90 grand a week. I can't remember the last time he played a game.
How could Nadim have guaranteed that he wouldn't play any more games and just got to sit on the bench like that?
Well, it's dead easy. Just don't try and train. Just make sure you don't get picked.
A very charmed life. Yeah, but now he just gets to sit in his... I don't know.
Yeah, but he's not getting 90.
Room.
He's not getting 90 grand a week to do that.
We don't know. Not seen his contract. For Gab, you're a pro wrestling fan. What song would you choose for your entrance music that played every single time you walked into a room?
I'm trying. Could you repeat that?
I think you're a pro wrestling fan, according to Shaka Hislop's credit card debt. Gab, you're a pro wrestling fan. What song would you choose for your entrance music to play every time you walk into a room?
I think it's obvious, isn't it?
Ooh, that's a really, really good question. I kind of go back to the classic ECW entrance themes. And one of my early favorite tag teams was the Public Enemy. And totally incongruous, but it was their entrance music was the Hot Stepper. And I think that's tremendous entrance music. So I think that would definitely work for me.
What would your name be, Gab?
Oh, stop. Just Gab, fine. I don't need gimmicky names. I'm an old school DCW fan. I don't need gimmicky names.
I thought Guy would have gone for Tina Turner.
What?
Simply the best. No danger.
What would you go for?
Ooh. Something stupid. Something daft. Who let the dogs out? Something like that. Perfect.
What would your name be?
Doggy Dog.
Nadim? What would your music be?
Well, if you see me on the show, I'd probably get some Hendrix up there. Just get the riff from All Along the Watchtower as I'm walking in. No audio, just no lyrics, just that riff playing over and over. And that's funky enough for me.
I like it. And a name?
What riff is that? He's on about.
Tell you.
Gosh, you've caught me out. I have no idea. I'm sure someone can send one in for next time.
What can we call Nadim?
Nadim.
The Ned.
The big O.
Not dumb.
The big O.
Not dumb.
The Ned. The big O. Okay.
All right, a couple of options for you, Nadim, in case now that you're retired, you do decide to take on a career in pro wrestling. Anyway, that's all we've got time for on the latest edition of the show. Thank you so much for sending in your questions.
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Felt cartridge.
What were you thinking that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much unknown.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia, Wednesday night at 10, 9 central on ABC.